wondering if you wanted to switch to item...
Oh, pardon me. Yeah, we were going to switch to 20.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's the executive...
Yeah.
That was part of 20.
Part of 20, right? So item 20 is the executive officer's report, and the reason I, for you folks in the third row, that's you, we have, you're outnumbered in terms of people who turned in cards, so that's why we're going to switch to item 20 and at least take up the item that you've submitted cards for, which is the update that we provided on agricultural regulation program, which starts... Yes?
I need to recuse myself on item 20.
Okay.
As I've been informed that there is a conflict.
Okay. So that item starts on page 6, and I don't know that we intended to provide any statements ahead of time other than the written report to let you know where we are with the ag program and the ag order renewal that's coming up.
We have a supplemental sheet on that, I know, and I don't seem to have it now.
Mr. Chairman, I did want to make a comment at the appropriate time about Mr. Hayashi's participation, so whenever...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
In front of you.
I wanted to just provide some clarification to the board members and the public about Mr. Hayashi, as he just stated, is recusing himself and not participating in this manner because he has a conflict. But I also just wanted to clarify what is appropriate and just to state that Mr. Hayashi, as an owner of a farmland, can represent himself and make comments to this board representing himself. He also may speak with any other members of the public or other people subject to the order, and that's okay. He cannot, just like everybody else, have conversations with board members because it would be considered ex parte communications, and he cannot represent a group of people under contract or something to make comments to the board. So I just wanted to clarify that for the public and for the board members.
Okay. Thank you.
So we've provided this report which summarizes some of the or the major water quality issues that we are going to try to address and do a better job with our update of the order, which include toxicity from pesticides, nutrients and resulting nitrate, sediment, habitat degradation, and of course tied in with the habitat degradation issue is the conflict that we've had on the food safety issue, where there's been this incentive, or more than incentive, to actually tear out vegetated areas, in some cases vegetated areas that were actually paid for with grants. So we've gone through our process for making proposed revisions to the irrigated ag order and pointed out the steps that we have from the non-point source pollution control program that's down the bottom, page 8, and the top of page 9, and pointed out that we will be attempting to inform anyone who is interested in this issue and would like to weigh in on it and provide recommendations to do so. For example, municipalities or any folks who are using groundwater that may be impacted and that sort of thing. And I've lost track of whether we were planning a presentation. No? Okay. I guess I just gave it. Other than if there are questions on just that section of the EO report, and as you know, we have several cards for people who want to speak to it, which are over here. Any questions on the... Oh, and as far as the... you mentioned supplemental sheet. That's on the tail end of the question and answer document, I believe.
I wasn't really clear after you're reading your report, Mr. Briggs. How are we going to handle the food safety issue of removing the vegetation around ag lands and then with our order telling the agriculture industry that they have to have vegetation for filtration and stormwater runoff and other runoffs. And what brings to mind is the session that we attended, and I attended on behalf of this board at Monterey, when the state, I don't remember what department that was, Food and Safety, I guess it was, had that hearing, but they really weren't interested in what we had to say from the Regional Water Quality Control Board about the position that they're putting the local agriculture community in by the setbacks that they're requiring and the possible repercussions to those particular ag areas, the possible fining that would be because they violate their ag waiver permit.
Right.
So how
you summarized the dilemma pretty well.
Well, I kind of hedged around a little bit, but it's a question in my mind, and how are we going to do that? Because I, just living in the Salinas Valley, it's hard not to look at some of these agriculture lands as you're just driving around. But I know some areas and some companies are requiring much further setbacks that I feel personally is necessary, and putting the ag community in a very hard financial situation by those type of requirements.
Right.
And so I see we have two state agencies that have two requirements for the ag community to try to adjust to. And not that I don't support food safety. I do support food safety immensely, but there's also, you know, clean water is also part of food safety. If you don't have clean water and you're putting on crops, then you possibly can contaminate that particular crop that you're utilizing. So that's part of my question. And then for the rest of the question, reading in here that there's going to be more stringent requirements than the previous order, and what does that really mean? Or am I interpreting that incorrectly?
Well, as I said, we summarized the main water quality issues, and I listed them. And so part of our obligation as staff is to try to come back with a proposal to you that will get us further down the road and do a better job in terms of making progress on all those fronts. So that's you said. Tighter requirements. It's really up to you as a board to decide.
So we'll
bring that to you. But what we see is that we will have to figure out ways that we will have improvements in terms of ag operations affecting water quality.
Well, I would hope that whatever the staff brings forward, that it would be something that the ag community could obtain. It's
right.
Attainable.
Yeah.
There's no use putting some requirement out there that nobody's going to be able to meet. And then you're going to put a lot of small farmers out of business because they can't afford to meet those requirements.
Right, and feasibility, practicality are all considerations.
Well, the other thing is we have a lot of minority farmers in the Salinas Valley, and I imagine even in San Luis Obispo County and Santa Barbara County that would affect immensely. And, of course, one of the things that try to promote is minorities involved in the farming industry. So I have some concerns with that as well.
Right.
Well, we'll have to see what they propose.
Yeah.
Bring up these issues because I'm hoping that the staff will look at those, and I'm sure you already have to some degree, but I remember the process that we went through to get to the ag waivers that we have at hand at this particular point in time, which are about ready to elapse. And are we going, is the staff doing the same type of process? Are you doing the outreach to the ag communities and talking to the different groups that are involved and working with them and generating mutual agreed ideas?
We've convened the Ag Advisory Panel like we had previously.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, we're actually trying to expand the outreach. That's covered on what page?
Well, I saw you alluded to that. But
right, page 9. I see that as actually an expansion of the outreach that we had last time. We've had 3 meetings of the Ag Advisory Panel out of a scheduled 5. Remains to be seen whether 5 will be sufficient. And the concept is basically the same, to have the Ag Advisory Panel try to come up with some agreements as far as what they'd recommend. They won't necessarily all agree. It's a cross-section of a group.
No, there's a lot of amount there. I wouldn't, but I'm sure we can get agreement with the majority, and if we can go forward with that.
Remains to be seen. But that is a recommendation to us as staff in terms of what we bring to you. As far as you mentioned, you know, small farmers and you referred to practicality, one of our jobs is to, rather than bring one recommendation to you, is to bring the options. So what I intend to do is bring a range of options for these various issues with a recommendation and a sound foundation for that recommendation, but so that you can also see what the options might be. And that way, if and as I'm sure there will be, other people will say, well, I don't like that part of the recommendation, you should do something else. That way we've done our homework and addressed it as far as why we've made our recommendation, but has some discussion about what the options are.
Okay. Well, I'm sure some folks that are here want to have some comments, too.
On the food safety issue, there you know, a lot of people here who know a lot more about that than I do, and you've actually attended, you referred to a conference that you attended, and I didn't. But I don't know that it's, I don't know that the main rub is between two state agencies, as I think you referred to it, but it seems to me there is a rub between the water quality protection, which is our concern, and the buyers who are
the shippers,
who are in the driver's seat as far as dictating these clearance zones,
yeah.
And without any firm guidelines on what is really needed. So
well,
I think part of what we need is to have some clarity about what is really a problem, because there are certainly those, again, who are more knowledgeable about it than I am, who feel that there is no benefit to be obtained in the food safety issue from eliminating vegetation around
the
crops.
Well, I kind of ran 2 meetings that I attended. One, I think you attended, and I read on behalf of the board, but that was at the fairgrounds in Monterey. That was where we had another state agency that was running that particular meeting. And the other one I was referring to, and I kind of ran both of them together, is one that Fresh Express put on
right
at the hotel. And that was very interesting on E. coli,
mm-hmm.
and how it affects irrigated agricultural lands, and what they found and where they're going from here. And I think one of our staff members also attended that.
Joe Wilson, I think.
Yes. And that was very interesting. Some of it I didn't understand. It was more technical than
right.
than I had knowledge of, but some was on a layman's level that I understood very well. But my concern is that agriculture industry in California is a very important very important for the state of California because of the economics that it provides. And if we put different orders on them that they cannot continue to be able to produce their product, and puts them out of the worldwide stage of being able to sell their produce, then that's going to be an economic detriment for the state of California, especially for this region.
Right. That's where the practicality and feasibility comes in.
Okay. We'll go to our speakers.
Sure.
Okay. Tracy Roberts.
followed by Kirk Schmidt, and then Richard Quant. Those are the first three.
Good afternoon, members of the board. I am Tracy Roberts. I am the Environmental Resources Coordinator at the Monterey County Farm Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been a watershed coordinator in the Central Coast for about 9 years, working with growers throughout the Pajaro and now into the Salinas watershed. The regional board and staff developed a partnership with agriculture and environmental stakeholders to build the existing ag waiver program with a collaborative approach. My message today is that we should build upon that valued collaboration and not throw it out the window in favor of more of a command and control attitude that will actually slow our progress toward improving water quality. The current ag waiver is working. The ag community has been so well engaged by the collaborative approach that we helped to enroll 400,000 acres of irrigated agriculture and helped to educate more than 1,000 farmers. You'll hear also from the Ag Water Quality Coalition that has facilitated much of that work. Yes, there are certainly aspects of the current ag waiver that can be improved upon. Data management, enforceability, these are the aspects that the members of the ag panel thought that we were coming to the table to discuss. But that hasn't been the case. Some staff who are not directly involved with developing and maintaining the trust and respect that the current ag waiver was built upon may not see the value of that collaboration, and we're really hoping that they will want to build upon the existing successful partnerships that this board and your staff developed through a lot of hard work with both the agricultural and the environmental community. We don't want to see that lost. Please be assured that the agricultural community understands the importance of habitat. But effective habitat protection will come through watershed management planning that brings together all the elements of a community, urban, agriculture, residential, industrial. The interpretation of what riparian protection is can be vastly different from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and even from practitioner to practitioner in the field. The attempt to insert a riparian protection requirement into the ag waiver will definitely destabilize this whole program. I've heard that some are saying the collaborative program doesn't work because 3 years of cooperative monitoring program data are not showing improvements in water quality. I think that might be based possibly on disappointed realization that cleaning up surface water quality isn't as easy as we all thought it might be. 3 years of data just is not enough to be able to say that this hasn't worked. So here's my proposal for successful ag waiver going forward. Don't include a requirement for riparian protection in this discharge waiver. Rather than require on-farm data to be submitted to this body, give growers the opportunity to find out whether and to what extent their own ranches are part of local water quality problems. It worked in Quail Creek, where I've been working directly with those growers. Each grower obtained confidential water quality samples from their own fields. That information helped them assess their current practices, and now those growers are planning on their own or meeting with the RCD, NRCS to develop some long-term solutions. This process of working together as a watershed based on relevant and confidential data is the way, hands down, to protect local water quality. And it takes time and resources.
Can you wrap it up, please?
Yes.
Okay.
I hope you won't allow the command and control attitude to derail a collaborative partnership. It's just not time to abandon collaboration. Thank you for your time.
You know, question I have for you is that I think our staff has been on this from the very beginning, Allison Jones. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure what you mean by some loss of staff and their approach to this.
Yeah.
She's been on it from
Absolutely, I completely agree.
Prior to day one,
mm-hmm.
and she's still on it.
Yeah, I'm really not referring to Allison's methods or style. I think that at the ag panel meetings, there's a very strong sense that some staff, not all, really want to just regulate, push aside all that we've built and worked for, and are now just coming to us with very specific requirements, including the 30-foot riparian, which is a deal breaker for the Ag Waiver program. You may not be aware of that, so we're here to enlighten you. We hope that it can be resolved because we think that those people want to see water quality improved, just like we all do.
Okay. And then the other comment you made about who thought of what the water quality could be improved in 3 years. I kind of missed that whole, the point of that statement and
yeah,
what it was really directed to. Who thought what?
What I have been hearing is that there are some people that say maybe this whole collaborative approach that we've worked on together isn't actually having an effect, because if you look at the CMP data, 3 years only of data, you don't see all these positive downward trends in the water quality parameters. You see movement, you still see where I've been working most in...
Yeah, but who thought there would be improvement in 3 years?
It's something that I've heard people talk about.
But from the water board or the water board staff?
Actually, it's been not necessarily water board staff. Maybe others can enlighten you to where that has come from. But what my comment was basically directed to is to ensure that we all understand that isn't enough time and that we do want to stay the course.
I would agree that it takes time. That I don't think, I certainly have looked at the first five-year period as a period of time to really assess whether, in fact, there was a problem, where the problem is, the degree of the problem. I mean, I recall when we went through this, mm-hmm. through our public comment or public participation right. comment before we adopted the waiver, that people were saying, you know, at the end of year one, would you guys be willing to consider lowering the monitoring requirements because we think that the data that you're basing your action on is not representative of the conditions out in the field? And would you be willing to consider after year one maybe a relaxation in those monitoring requirements? So, you know, I think what we said was we will look at anything, you know, at any point in time. Staff thought that data suggests that there's something there, and I think that's what the data really now after 5 years appears to be suggesting. So in my mind, we've just kind of gone through that process of validating what were maybe some assumptions and what we had known based on some limited sampling.
I totally agree,
yeah.
And I'm happy to hear you say that. We really just figured out that, yes, there are problems.
Yeah.
That's really where we are. Just a brief example in terms of the data that has been collected and how important it is for growers to get their own confidential edge-of-field information. As a watershed coordinator, I've seen a lot of activity when they have it specific to themselves and it isn't in an unsafe sort of public
yeah.
forum, they really begin to take that action. And that only began to occur in 2008 as part of the follow-up program
right.
for the cooperative monitoring program. So, again, an example that shows us we're really at the beginning here.
Well, I see that, and I just want to make sure that, you know, I remember this properly, that no grower wanted to have any sampling done on their own farms.
That would be reported.
Yeah, that would be reported. I mean, there was a
that's still
real,
very true.
Hesitation, opposition, nothing that could, you know, identify a farm. So I believe stations were chosen so that we could just assess what was going on and not have anyone feel that they were going to be identified.
You remember it very well. And that is yeah. how the cooperative monitoring program works. It's
yeah.
a good program.
So you're suggesting now that it move into being able to actually sample individual farms?
No, sir. I'm not suggesting that at all. The example that we've seen in Quail and Chular Creeks, they were two of the watersheds of concern where we had been seeing some toxicity, some even organophosphates occurring there. You had earlier had a toxicity workshop to talk about some of this. Preservation Inc., working with their board, Central Coast Water Quality Preservation Inc., added a confidential monitoring component, an educational component. It's really an opportunity for growers to finally see not just what is downstream of me and what is a few blocks away at this cooperative monitoring point, but how might I actually be contributing to it? It is the ideal situation for them to begin to piece together whether they need to change things or not, and where on the ranches to change those things. So I'm just really supporting the idea of not asking for any farm-level data from the growers. And I, again, nobody's put that in writing or said that, yes, we're going to do this, but I am concerned about it, and I wanted to reiterate that it won't be effective.
Thanks for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Schmidt.
Good afternoon, Chairman Young, members of the board, Mr. Briggs, Kirk Schmidt, Executive Director, Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, or as the farmers say, Preservation, Inc. Mm-hmm. We do the water quality monitoring on behalf of farmers, the cooperative monitoring program. This past year, besides the 50 sites, we also did 32 additional upstream sites. And as Tracy has referred to, we've provided confidential sampling to growers in key areas that we identified this past year. The ag waiver process in 2003 was collaborative and very successful in reaching an ag waiver that was supported by the agricultural community and also endorsed by the environmental community. Region 5 has adopted this approach for their long-term irrigated ag program, where they're meeting monthly now to develop a view that will allow farmers and regulators and the environmental community to work in the long term. This is important, and it's important here on the Central Coast so that we either have a recognition that the ag waiver, when it's renewed, is going to be renewed on a schedule that the farmers can build into their planting plans, or it will be the timeline will be extended. Recently, we had the fourth meeting of the ag panel canceled, and there's only one additional meeting left, the fifth meeting, and we're and your staff is bringing in a facilitator for the fifth meeting, which is in March. The ag waiver is set to renew in July. It seems unlikely that the process can be completed by July to have the matter before your board. This is important to agriculture so they can plan to become, to adopt whatever is necessary in the ag waiver as the planting cycle comes up, but also to participate in the process. One of the things that has come up in the last ag panel meeting was a discussion of riparian setbacks and riparian vegetation. This by itself is a very significant issue because it does address, as you referred to, the food safety issues head on. However, if this issue is brought into the ag waiver process, I believe it will be it'll inexplicably delay it, and we will never get to a conclusion on the ag waiver. So I would suggest that the issue which your staff finds important regarding riparian vegetation be severed from the ag waiver discussion at this time so that the ag waiver can be renewed, go through the CEQA process if necessary, and be adopted to provide some certainty for farmers of what they're expected to do over the next 5 years. And then take additional time, if you desire, to look at the riparian issues, because there are significant conflicts, as you're aware, with food safety mandates from the buyers, which place the growers in a conflicting position where they can neither satisfy the requests of this agency on riparian issues nor continue to sell their product. So hopefully that issue could be severed and additional time could be allowed just to consider that one food safety riparian conflict area and move forward with the ag waiver as previously discussed after removing this one issue. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Schmidt. Richard Quant, followed by Joy Fitzhugh and Morgan Rafferty, and then lastly, Kay Mercer.
My name is Richard Quant. Good afternoon, board members. I'm president of the Grower-Shipper Association of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo Counties. I did submit some written comments to the board on this particular issue, and I would like to, at least a few minutes to summarize those comments. I did participate in the ag waiver renewal advisory panel in 1983 and 1984 that resulted in the adoption of the ag waiver. I can tell you that that panel and that effort was based on collaboration, and it was based on some dialogue. And I'm also a member of this renewal panel that's recently started here in 2009. And I can tell you it's a very different effort than the panel effort in 2004. And the big difference is in 2004, you know, Allison Jones oversaw that project. But I think all the people that participated in that and resulted in this unanimous recommendation that was adopted by the board, by the way, we all had equal input, and nobody was trying to dictate to the panel members the end result. And what's happened this time is you have your upper management staff is sitting in on those discussions, and they're trying to dictate the terms of the waiver. And that, from our perspective, that's not a truly collaborative approach. And that's what I'm fearing that is threatening to disrupt this panel. And that's why one of the things I was asking the board for your help is to provide some sort of direction to your staff, especially your upper management staff, that seem to be wanting to drive the process and dictate the ultimate terms of the process, to back out of that process and let the advisory panel come up with some recommendations based on some collaboration and some discussions, and have an open process that will yield some results. One example, at our last meeting, virtually the entire meeting, most of the entire meeting, was dealt with this mandate that we heard from your upper management staff about this need to have these riparian buffers, this 30-foot buffer, riparian buffer, on the edge of these farm fields where they border aquatic habitat. And that the farmers, at least the agriculture representatives that are participating in that panel, view that as a land use control, that the board is saying, if you want to get a conditional waiver, the permitting trigger to getting a conditional waiver is you giving up a 30-foot filter strip of cropland around your fields. And the farmers take strong exception to that. That would result in potentially thousands of acres being taken out of crop production and being used as for undisturbed soil or riparian vegetation. And we don't view that that's that's necessarily a water quality issue. That's an attempt to try to protect a biological resource using a land use control, not using a water quality objective. And that's the type of discussion that's entering into the ag panel. It's stalling our process. It's threatening to disrupt the entire panel and destabilize the entire collaborative process and the trust and the partnership that has been achieved over these 5, 6, 7 years. And instead of building upon that process, building upon the current waiver, building upon the dialogue, the trust, and the collaboration, and recognizing this is a long-term problem, we're going to have to, you know, and we're going to have to act as partners in trying to rectify that problem and improve water quality. Mm-hmm. It appears from our standpoint that your upper management staff is taking a rigid approach, trying to dictate to the panel where okay. this effort should go.
Mr. Quant, I see that we have two members on the panel. That's Allison Jones and Harvey Packard.
I attended the last meeting,
and you
along
did?
With Harvey and Allison.
Okay.
So I think the person that they're referring to is me.
Is you.
Yeah.
Is upper management?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was after the management squad actually asked Michael to attend the meeting. That would include me asking him to attend the meeting.
Okay. Well, what is the role of the advisory panel with respect to the recommendation that staff is going to have before the board?
It's advisory to our recommendation.
Okay. But who is the chair of the panel? Is there a chair?
Allison has been running the panel, I guess you'd say, so far, and things were rocky in the last meeting, and we had actually talked before we ever started the ag panel meetings about whether or not we should have a facilitator. The end result was we thought we'd see how it went, and if it looked like we ended up needing one, then we'd adjust, and that's exactly what we've done. That's why we postponed, not canceled, the next meeting.
Okay.
Well, schedule, as I said with my opening remarks, remains to be seen whether that, I don't know, that's a magic number.
To conclude very briefly, if I may, that the two things I'm asking the board that I think need to be done is to direct the water board staff to understand that in addressing aquatic habitat, they address it through water quality objectives and not through land use controls that deal with setbacks and buffers. For one, would be tremendous progress towards restoring that panel. And then secondly, is just impress upon your staff the importance of truly a collaborative approach and the benefit that will yield to water quality.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Joy Fitzhugh?
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Joy Fitzhugh. I'm legislative analyst for the San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau. I also worked as watershed coordinator in San Luis Obispo County for a number of years. I want to first say that we have had a very good working relationship with Allison Jones. I sat in the first panel. She has done a wonderful job. I think she's in a very difficult position with the new panel because trying to be moderator as well as a staff person who has to answer to the staff issues. I think one of the things that is really difficult is we really don't know as the ag panel, are we a rubber stamp? What are the flexibilities? I was very happy to see Roger Briggs say that our job is to bring a range of options, because that hasn't been how we felt, that we really did have that input to say, here's another option, here's another way to go, here's the sort of thing. And I think we need to have an extended period of time, more than one more meeting. It's just not going to cut it. And if you'll remember, I think it was a year and a half or maybe more that the ag panel worked on the first one. And we ended up getting a very good consensus, and I'm hoping that we can work toward that again. I do know that my own board of directors, is when I reported back to him, was very skeptical about my returning, and I said, please do not pull me off, because I feel that we have a ways to go. I'm hoping we can go there, and I think we need to work together on this. Thank you.
You know, we are going to work this out. I wouldn't be too concerned about it. I mean, now we're not starting from scratch, so we put a whole year into collaboration and our public workshops. I don't think we need that this time, okay?
Well, no, I don't think we need to start from scratch, but I do feel that we don't have that same cohesiveness that we have had, and unfortunately, when we get hit flat-footed with a riparian issue and what appears to be the specter of individual monitoring so that you can give the data to prove that each property is meeting the nutrient standards and meeting the pesticide toxicity requirements, you saw the ag people just do this, go, whoa, wait a minute. The reason we're in the cooperative monitoring is we can't afford the individual monitoring. So I think there's a lot of clarification that's needed, and I feel confident that Allison and Mike will bring that information back to us. We desperately need it. Even if we can't change what a regulation says, we need to know exactly what that says so that we know where we stand, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. Thank you for your comments.
I guess a quick question. Joy? Thanks for your comments, Joy.
Question.
I didn't follow exactly what you meant when you said you said we're asking, are we a rubber stamp?
Right. And
what does that mean?
What has been the feeling is that we'll get told this is what you do, this is what the waiver is going to say, and we just want you to sit there and, okay, you guys sat here, you sat through the meetings, and your name is on here, so you're now affiliated with something you might not like. And not that we all like things. I mean, we didn't like everything that came down in the first one, but we felt that it was necessary because we were working together.
Yeah, and I can tell you that no matter what the topic is, and so ag is no exception, that we try to accurately portray what the comments are and what the positions are. That doesn't mean we agree with everyone, of course.
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely
impossible.
Yeah.
But we do try to accurately portray for the board's benefit what the various positions are.
And I think that needs, and we need to have that delineation of exactly what has no flexibility. Where is the flexibility in this so that we can have those options, the range of options you were talking about?
Right. Okay.
Can I ask, Joy, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Michael. What you were talking about rubber stamping. You or the rest of the panel members rubber stamping. And I just that came up in the advisory panel meeting, the last meeting. A couple of people had that comment. And at the time, I was thinking the same thing I'm thinking right now. And that is, what are the odds that you would rubber stamp something?
Run that by me again.
What are the odds that you would rubber stamp something?
I probably wouldn't. If I were asked to rubber stamp something that I could not even halfway come to agree with, I would be packing up my bags and going home. But that's, we want to know what the intent is. And if the intent is you come, you agree, and you go away.
Let me say this about at least what I would expect from the ag panel. I would expect for if the panel can reach consensus on an item, then we know what that consensus is. If it can't reach consensus on an item, so we know what the different opinions are, the different recommendations to address that item. And you just kind of go down the list. I mean, we could take each of these that, you know, we checked off here. For instance,
toxicity, nutrients.
Thank you. Pesticide toxicity, whatever's being discussed. If there's no consensus, okay. The panel has a range.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to go down through each of these. I wouldn't expect you, the panel, to be boxed into adopting something that is not
feasible, not a consensus. Practical or economical.
Whatever the reasons are, I mean, you go ahead, the panel should make its recommendations to staff, who's going to prepare the staff report, and then when the board hears this, the board will, like it did before, sort through everything, and if we feel that some things are maybe not ready for resolution or for an inclusion in the permit at that point in time, being July, you know, we'll make that determination. If something's already, you know, then we'll probably move forward on it. But, you know, we'll handle it, and I think in a very similar fashion.
I felt so good about our first waiver. I don't want to see that breakdown.
Yeah, that's unlikely to happen. I think I was chair then.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you were.
And Russ was vice chair, and I think the rest of the board, you know, feels similarly. So don't give up hope, but work towards, you know, trying to get things resolved, and where you can't, then just move on with it. Russ?
Well, I just have one question. Has your ag panel members changed from before?
To a small degree, but not that many, have we?
Pretty much the same.
And the only
there have been some changes. Some of them are representing the same entities, but maybe a different person. But
well, the reason I was asking is because if you have new people on the panel, then from the original ag waiver, then you have to bring those people up to speed from where you were and where you are today.
There have been some changes, but I don't believe it's the majority of the board has changed.
Yeah. And the only change that we have is Mr. Packard is now sitting on the panel. Is that right? And of course, Allison.
Harvey Packard is on the panel, and I attended the last meeting.
Yeah, the 800-pound gorilla, huh?
Apparently,
Michael.
Well, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And I don't. Karen Worster, I don't think was at the last.
No, she was not there.
Meeting, and I think her status is a little different this time.
Okay. I have one question for Mr. Briggs, and I I meant to bring it up earlier in my long dissertation of the issue, but is there a cost analysis for any changes in the ag waiver that for the ag community?
Page 10 of the EO report, top of page 10.
It says there, but my question to that is, who's making the analysis?
The board staff.
The board staff.
With input from, you know, any other interested parties, but board staff is responsible for doing that.
Okay. Now, are you getting input from the agriculture community on those items? What cost it would be to change any of the previous ag waiver to new requirements?
Have we gotten any input from the ag community yet? No. Are we interested in it? Yes. Are we going to do outreach to try and get that information? Yes.
That's all I want to hear. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just want to follow up on a couple of things that we were just talking about there, and that is that collaboration means different things to different people. And sometimes it means to some people, don't bring up issues that I'm uncomfortable with or that I don't want to deal with. Set those aside. That's actually not collaboration. That's omission and avoidance. And I want to make it clear that from staff's perspective, we're going to bring all of the information to the board. We're not going to be driven by consensus about what we bring, about the information that we bring to the board. All of the information is going to come to the board. We'll evaluate all of the information, and we'll make recommendations based on all of the information. So a collaborative process is not one where you omit certain pieces of information to obtain consensus about the information that's presented.
Okay.
And what is your tentative date to bring to the board? Is that the
July
meeting in Watsonville?
It is scheduled for July at this time. I'll speak for myself. I have very serious doubts that we're going to make July.
Then to Mr. Briggs, are we going to have a two-day meeting?
In July?
Well, if whenever we bring the ag waivers forward.
Oh, when we bring it?
Yes.
I don't know. We'll have to evaluate that depending on what else is on the agenda.
Okay.
Okay. Morgan Rafferty. Followed by Kay Mercer, final speaker, Alon Perlman.
Good afternoon. My name is Morgan Rafferty. I'm the director of the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo. And this is my first year on the ag panel. The Environmental Center was represented by someone else the last time around. And first of all, I'd like to thank Allison for her hard work on this. It's not been easy to be the chair of that panel this year. So I'd like to thank her for her hard work on that. And I think that one of the things that's been missing in some of this process and in the report that I read is an acknowledgement of all the successes of the last 5 years since the first conditional waiver was put into place. All of the acres that were enrolled and all of the progress that's been made in the hard work that the growers have done to improve water quality throughout the region. And so I think that we need to really recognize what's been done so far. And they created their own monitoring program. A lot of the growers stepped up and really took part in the process. And I think a lot of them did that because they felt like they were included in the process, that their concerns were acknowledged, and that there was real buy-in. And so that's why a lot of us are concerned about the process so far, and we want to be sure that they have the same buy-in when a new waiver is adopted. So, and another thing that I think needs to be acknowledged is that because of all of the improvements that have been made already, incremental improvements are harder to find sometimes on the ground. And so we need to recognize that and acknowledge that incremental improvements can be very costly and harder to find. And finally, I'd just like to say that right now, with the limited staff and budget that everyone's dealing with, you really need the cooperation and when you adopt the new waiver, and that we really need to balance the goals of water quality improvement with an acknowledgement of all the economics and regulatory and food safety challenges that the growers face today. And as the director of the Environmental Center, of course, I'm concerned about protection of riparian buffers and aquatic habitat and all of those things, but I really think that we need to balance all of those concerns as we go through this process. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Kay Mercer.
I'm Kay Mercer, Executive Director of the Central Coast Ag Water Quality Coalition, and that's a newly merged coalition whose constituency is every grower in Region 3. Thanks for the opportunity to come today before you to speak on two subjects. The first subject is going to be the Guadalupe Settlement Fund and the NIFWIT Fund. I brought copies of two letters which reference the negotiations for these funds. In 2008, the board kindly approved the granting of the NIFWIT funds twice because the board recognized the value of the coalition in furthering water quality through education outreach, coordination, and facilitation. Unfortunately, the coalition will not be able to accept those funds that were approved at this time for a variety of reasons. The first reason, the coalition cannot contract to terms and conditions that we may not be able to deliver, and we're being asked to do that. The second reason, because of the 2008 granting process, it was pretty negative and protracted for the coalition. We have formulated a funding policy that we will not accept grants from a regulatory agency that directly regulates water quality. If there is a requirement that we gather farm-level data and report it back to that regulatory agency. Regrettably, we feel like the region board was asking us to do that, and we see this as a quasi-regulatory data-gathering function, and we feel like that's precisely what staff was trying to force us to do through under the guise of implementation or accountability. This is simply not acceptable to the ag community. Finally, the 2008 grant process, combined with the impacts of the state funding freezes, do not make the Water Board grants attractive. They're a net loss. We find them to be time-consuming, demanding, and capricious. These grants are, we're aware that the State Board is reassessing their granting process. We've been asked to comment on it, and we think that such a reassessment is highly needed. Having said this, the coalition is capable of separating the funding issues from our reason to be. We're all here to improve water quality, and we'll continue to work towards that end. So that's the second reason I'm here. I participated in the conditional ag panel. I did not participate the first time around. I was hired 2 weeks after it was adopted, or before it was adopted. But quite honestly, I'm very concerned about this process. The first waiver asks a simple question. Are there water quality issues? And the monitoring data indicated that, yes, there were. The next logical step is to define the problem. What are the sources of water quality impairments? This is exactly what Chairman Young was saying. As part of this, we think that growers that are in the impaired areas need to determine, are they part of the problem, and can they be part of the solution? You ask, should the growers be required to report that? I say no, but it is a step that needs to be taken. The next step should be, what should be done about the problem? From our perspective, staff is trying to skip the second step and go straight to a regulatory solution. This is a pivotal time for water quality improvement. If the regional board staff continue along their present course, the opportunity to effectuate positive change will be lost. We are moving from cooperative efforts to non-productive polarized positions. Collaborative process has been seriously damaged. The tone and demeanor of upper management staff has been unyielding, and I am being polite. And it saddens the coalition to see staff abandon years of positive work in exchange for a dogmatic approach to problem solving. It has been alleged by staff that water quality data are sufficient to demonstrate that the collaborative approach does not work. However, this is disingenuous, considering that there are no comparable data collected prior to in early 1990, before the collaborative approach began. There is no baseline upon which to make this conclusion. The coalition would like to request that the board take action to get the ag waiver process back on track by requiring staff to work in a way that fosters a cooperative and reasonable approach to water quality problem solving. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. On the first issue that you raised, not quite sure how to respond to that. Should we be finding some other entity to be carrying on that function? Seems like you've reached a point that your group is at odds with how we want to grant money.
The find an entity to do what, Chairman Young?
Do what your entity has been doing.
Our entity will continue to do what we're doing, but without the grant funding that you provide, we'll try to find other grant funding or come up with other sources of funding.
Okay.
And if we don't make it, we don't make it.
Okay. All right. And to the second issue you raised, what is the second step that staff is skipping over and going right to?
They're not defining what the sources of the problems are. We've asked a question: what is there a problem? And the answer is yes. And they're just going straight to a regulatory solution without really defining what the problem is. What are the sources? How did they get there? You know, how can they be addressed? They're trying to impose management practices. You know, it's a waste of time to impose management practices unless you choose the right ones to address what is causing the problem.
Do we not know what's causing the problem?
I think there are a lot of assumptions. I don't know what's causing the problem.
Well, for instance, like with toxicity, these are from chemicals that only come from agriculture.
That's not necessarily true, and I don't want to disagree with you. They are only labeled for ag use currently,
right.
But prior to taking them off, removing the urban label, the urban PCOs, pest control operators, stockpiled them. We do not know. No one in the state has any idea how much chlorpyrifos and diazon is still being used for urban uses. My understanding is, and I don't have the information right now, but there's preliminary data that's being collected in Sacramento and Orange County that indicate, and it's all urban, and they're so shocked by the amount of pesticide that is coming off of urban sources. So I don't know. I mean, I just find it that we are taking a very simplistic approach to the data.
Yeah, but in this region.
In this region, we're
taking throughout the Salinas Valley. What urban sources would be contributing?
Yeah, the city of every urban source, and including rural residential sources. You ask me if I know, and I think we're making assumptions. That is my opinion. We're making assumptions about these sources. I think that is what I'm trying to say. I think assumptions are being made about all the sources, not just toxicity. I think it's complicated, and people are trying to take too simple an approach to it, and we're going to be applying management practices that may or may not clean up water, but by gosh, will be expensive.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Alon Perlman, last speaker.
Alon Perlman, Los Osos. And I'd like to keep this to the ag waiver, but I would like to say that this county is currently considering a processed waste application, a solid waste application ordinance. And I'm not sure if you are in contact with the county. As far as that ordinance is coming out right now. And I think for you to take a position.
What does that have to do with?
It goes on ag land. It's applied to ag land, and it's another source of potential contaminants. Of
talking about biosolids?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm actually asking about your positions on it rather than. But I would like to bring it up, and also in terms of the members of the Ag Council present, it's quite possible. I did talk to the representative of the Ag Council to the RAC, and he didn't seem to be aware of it at the time. I don't want to go into the Los Osos issue, but there is a DIR, and I would like to. Warden Creek has ephemeral tributaries, and there's some talk of. What I'm trying to get to is it are the 30 feet buffers, do those apply even if it's a spray field? Because it's technically not ag land. I'll agree if you find me off topic.
No. You have to ask staff that, because that's only something that is being discussed with what they might be bringing to the board in July.
Okay.
So that it's nothing that the board itself right now is even dealing with. We're just hearing discussion about it.
Well, in that case, maybe that's where I should spend my time.
But to get your question answered, you should talk to Allison Jones about it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. All right. That's it for our speakers on this.